Welcome to the Talking Earth, and you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland. And tonight is a pre-recorded program, and thanks to the esteemed, always helpful Kathleen Stevenson. Thank you, Kathleen. The program basically is in celebration of the poetry of David Johnson, who passed away February 21st of this year. And Josephine Bridges and Polo from the Asian Reporter came, and we recorded it during the day. And I must say, check out the Asian Reporter, because this is Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, and there are a bunch of wonderful things happening. There's at the convention center, there's a wonderful Asian festival on May 20th. We could talk more about, just check out the Asian Reporter. It's a great newspaper. So a little Kodo music maybe to set this up, and a little Kodo music, get that feeling, and then we'll go to the, we'll get that. Okay. Welcome to the Talking Earth, and I am so pleased to have Polo and Josephine Bridges, and I'm going to give Polo's full name here, from the Asian Reporter, to honor, we're so sad, it's terrible, the poet David Johnson, who I knew. I had read him in Confluence magazine, some of the selected poems, and Peter Jensen, I may even have a tape in the past of David Johnson's work, but Josephine, you are the arts and entertainment editor, but also you had a very close personal relationship. You were a wife and then an ex-wife and various things. We don't have to wait.
And a friend.
And a friend. And you were with him when he suddenly died. And
I wasn't.
Well, you
after.
Were right near. You were down the hall, as you say, and we're going to, I think we'll start the Talking Earth tonight with maybe reading from your memorial piece, and the date on that was help me, Polo, and I'm going to give your full name, Polo.
It's from 21 March 2000.
Oh, okay, and you have some comments in there. Maybe this will get the program off the ground, but Polo is a contributing editor at the Asian Reporter, which I think is one of the city's and Oregon's greatest international weeklies. I kept thinking it was biweekly because there's two issues in this box and my brain wasn't working right. Polo, long name is Renault Latungsajang Catalani. Okay, I'm close, Polo. But so say something, Polo. Just say something. Respond.
All right, repeat after me.
Oh, no.
Renault Latungsajang Catalani.
Oh, beautiful. I hope you brought a poem that we can sing a song in your ethnic island language. We're going to do this on the program. But I'm part of the poetry community, and, you know, I haven't seen David Johnson in the last few years. And I know, Josephine, you were with Jeanette Purcell and, help me, Elizabeth
Archer
at the St. John's Bookstore, which is another wonderful community space, you know, and you did a memorial reading. How did that go? That was on April 20th.
It was terrific. Of course.
I wish somebody had recorded it. But
oh, there's that.
I know. No one ever records these public events. But, you know, I mean, unless LaBarbara Morticello, my co-host, does that. But let's focus on we'll focus on David. But shall we start with the memorial piece you wrote, David Johnson, contributing editor? Now, before we do, what did he do as a contributing editor? He wrote book reviews.
You know, I have always wondered what contributing editors do. You probably ought to ask Polo that.
Okay.
David certainly wrote plenty for the paper, but I don't know what made him a contributing editor. Do you? What made you one?
Yeah, and. David and I had different kinds of roles because the newspaper needs to be read by many different kinds of folks. In fact, 65 to 68% of our readership are Anglos, and the other 32% are Asians and Islanders. So David's role as an editor was to sort of keep the sensibility of the newspaper working across those lines.
So he was an incredibly valuable person at the Asian Reporter to make this blend work.
David is encyclopedic in his knowledge.
I want to know more about him. I want to discover him because I haven't been around him in 10 years, and I felt guilty. I felt guilty because I've been doing the Talking Earth poetry program with Barbara for almost three decades, and I feel sad. So we're having David on air now.
Yeah.
You folks are going to help us channel David's spirit, and so. I saw those cultural and literary. He was a reviewer. He could do all of that. But let's talk about just a little bit more about what he did, Polo, and a little more. So he was sort of the interpreter between the Anglos and the Asian community here.
Well, David had quite a background of studying and living in a number of places in Asia, you know, and we have a We have problems with that concept of Asia. We don't quite know what that means.
Sort of a colonial Western concept in some
ways. I think it means everything, to answer your question, Walt, it means everything west of Lincoln City. You know, or just beyond the breakers at Seaside is Asia. And we don't have that concept back home. Luckily, we have that concept in Portland, so we have this newspaper, Asian Reporter. But David then was able... through his studies, through his travels, as the white guy on board.
Yeah, the white Anglo or whatever.
Yeah, to give that perspective. And my job as the rice picker, as the brown boy locally, is to kind of have that pan-Asian sensibility that makes an English language weekly work for folks who speak probably close to 30 languages. Isn't that right, Josephine?
Indeed.
Locally? At least that many ethnic and national groups who are now called Asian.
Well, Polo, I want to give you a great respect because as I have some education with the Hispanic or Latino poetry and, you know, of the Americas, but the way you handle your column and you introduce the lexicon of patois, we use that word, I maybe multicultural, Asian slang, it's fascinating. Your column is... just an education, a quick humanistic education. I respect you for that. I thought you'd be, and you're a poet, and I'm going to bring you back later on. But so David, we're not going to wade into this too deep. We're going to come right to David, and we'll go into this memorial piece, which is wonderful. But the Asian Reporter, how does it juggle all this stuff? Are there conferences, or who decides? You're one of the main editors then, I suspect. And then there's Taro O'Sullivan, but how do you come up with the incredible mix in the Asian Reporter?
I mean, well, I think the simple answer is to say Jody Lim manhandles everybody because she's one very strong woman with some very clear ideas and an incredible work ethic. Jody's there till midnight, probably every day. But the broader answer is we have a kind of kitchen table approach where everybody has something to say. And in a Latino family, like you're aware of, we call it familia, or in the Asian family, the way things work is you give everybody space to do what they do well. And in the mix, somehow...
Comes together.
You come...
Each week.
Right, and you give someone responsibility for holding all that in their muscular arms, and Jody does just that.
Polo, it's amazing. The Asian Reporter makes Portland not be a provincial, small West Coast city. it puts Portland perhaps on the international map. And I want to turn to David here. This is a poetry program, but this paper must be recognized in Asia or in other places, isn't it? For are you online with it, or I'm just curious?
Yes, of course.
Yeah,
it's
electronically repeated.
I get corrected all the time from family back home or from folks in Hawaii who read this, and the correction is good.
Okay, well, so we're honoring the Asian Reporter tonight, and David Johnson was really a strong part of this mix. When did he come to the paper? It may be in the article, but
10 years. I'm thinking about 10 years ago. Do you have a recollection about that?
I can't remember anything more than last week.
I see. Right. Okay. I am guessing about 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
It was, let's see, that would be 96. Yeah, it was probably around there, maybe a little earlier.
Well, you know, as I look at Confluence, it's 1992. I don't see any sense that he was close to the Asian Reporter. I mean, he has references, you know, to Japanese and various, you know, cultures. But he was a Eugene. David Johnson was, I guess, born an Oregonian. He seems to love nature. He has a strong feeling for Native Americans, and obviously they're Asian. You know, they represent, you know, Asian culture. You know, if you get into it, I think.
We can brawl about that bit.
Well, okay. Well, we're not going to do that now.
Okay.
But he, you know, he wrote some poems, some, you know, Native American simpatico poems, and then he had some wonderful nature poems. So, Josephine, let's get into your article here. Do you want to read part of it, and Polo wants to add to it? Please.
What part do you want?
Well, just start off as he did with you know, with some background on David. You know, maybe the front end of it, and or maybe Polo wants to start it up. I don't know. But.
Well, I'll read the lead.
Okay.
I wish these words weren't true. David Johnson died on February 21st. It's taken me nearly a month to be able to write anything coherent, but everybody's been waiting patiently. David was not only a fine writer and a gracious colleague, he was my best friend. And so it's my harrowing privilege to write this final tribute. I have known David. He may have called himself Dave, but he never minded that I preferred the long version, which means beloved, since 1979. I work as a freelance journalist, contributing primarily and joyfully to the Asian Reporter thanks to him. We were married for 5 years. We edited each other's creative work for more than a decade. Best of all, I lived down the hall from him for what I never imagined would be the last 2 months of his life. David knew journalism. He studied it in college, but it was also in his blood. His maternal grandfather, Fayette Collins Hoyt, was editor and publisher of the Portal International in Portal, North Dakota. Hoyt's son, Collins, was a pressman at the Eugene Register Guard, and David was also no stranger to ink under his fingernails at the Bandon Historical Society Press, where he did fine printing. Jamie Lim, publisher of the Asian Reporter, said, "Dave helped our paper grow tremendously during the last 10 years. His contributions, commitment, and infectious personality will be remembered by us all." Why don't you read your part?
I so admire Josephine's writing, you know, aside from David. But, you know, I've always marveled, and I try, actually, to write like you do. Actually, I've stolen a lot of your things.
I try to write like you, too.
Over the years.
Uh-oh, colleagues. These are colleagues. Collegial remarks.
Because it's so full. I mean, she's factual, but there's such a strong voice and so much nuance between lines. And David was so much the same as a person reporting facts. And what I wrote about David in Josephine's memorial piece is as follows. David was both a comfort and a mystery, both as a writer and a man. The comforting part was his knowing that he knew so much, he had lived so much, and that he would judge you accordingly within his vast understanding and his big kindness. But come to think of it, that was the mystery of the guy, too.
Beautiful words. It sounds like there's really been a horrible thing happen to have him die. You know, it's really horrible. You also, Josephine, put a piece in the Southeast Examiner, which it says here that David worked for, didn't he also?
Yes, he did.
He helped the paper. All of these people on the Southeast Examiner, Ted Brewer, sales representative, saved us when we first bought the Southeast Examiner. We knew nothing about running a newspaper. We met at Cafe Lena. That's the poet's cafe, which doesn't exist anymore, Leanne Grable and her husband, Stephen. But it goes on here, Paul N. Peterson, New David, and many, many poets. So maybe the place to go, and we can just carry on a little bit. As I said, all of my references is to Confluence. So, you know, and this book came out with Peter Jensen and Eric Mueller in 1992. Josephine, we'll think about reading poems. Why don't we think about reading poems?
Well, why don't you start by reading some stuff from Confluence, since that's what you have there?
Yeah, it cuts off, but I and Polo, we've got to give Polo, he has such a wonderful voice, we've got to give him some poems, but... This is an early poem, Plundered by Nostalgia. This time out of the chute, I caught the apocalypse of Hiroshima, the bombing of Nagasaki. I remember tinted photos of lost pilots, the Everly brothers spinning on a thick plastic thumb. I am Danish and thus believe that the Norse discovered America and Columbus discovered syphilis. I know who carved the Kensington Stone, who placed the runes below the level of our view. I learned it from the Iroquois, talked with the Squash sisters, swam with the Zunis in the Lake of the Dead, followed Coulter down the beaver drags, got busted by the grasshopper plagues, crouched, scrabbling in the blue mud of Cripple Creek. I know the war of New Harmony has yet to be won, but I am wounded by visions. My Annie Oakley ticket to the chivalry has been punched too many times by those outsiders and dusters, those four galoots who just rode into town, the four horsemen of the apocalypse. But he has a wit, doesn't he? He has a cosmic wit. He covers a lot of ground in his poems. And
his wit is never mean. I think that's a really important part of it. He was never unkind with his wit.
One more here is this working class poem, and it came up, I think, in one of Josephine. What's this trompe l'oeil? Because trompe l'oeil means painting that looks just like a photograph or even better than a photograph, so we can't tell what nature is. But working class poem. So David was working class, is that correct?
Yes, his roots were working class. His dad drove a truck.
Yeah, and I think that comes up in this collection.
Yes.
Working class poem, The Road Across the Lake Inevitably Becomes the Lake. My French is lousy. Moose and shallows, unperturbed, chew cuds of waterweed. Salamanders undulate through a backwater, a proletarian mystique. Architectronics by De Chirico, set design by Sears and Roebuck. Rita Hayworth posing as Aurora Borealis, as cosmic vouchers stream down from God's copter, hovering above those who move the goods down the vertiginous belt to the vanishing point. The lake across the road inevitably becomes the road. It is a trick of the eye. So anyway, you guys take off. You guys take off. You help me here.
Can I quote again from Josephine's memorial tribute? This is Angie Chuang, my colleague, who writes the race and ethnicity
The Asian Reporter.
No, for the Oregonian.
Oh, for the Oregonian.
For the big O.
Okay.
And Angie wrote in this memorial piece that she remembers David as proletarian in the best possible sense. Whenever I think of David, I think of a series of poems he was working about riding the bus. He had a desire to connect with the people and the city, and he relished that experience. His voice as a poet, compassionate, down-to-earth, wide-eyed, was true to his voice as a person. I love both his work and his outlook on life. And I think that sums up so nicely, especially the last piece you wrote, about a sort of square-shouldered, working-class way of talking to us.
And I brought one of those poems.
Oh,
I love the bus poems, too.
Okay.
You want me to read that?
Oh, go for it, Josephine.
Yeah.
Well, let's just bat this around, and we'll feel our way through here, because I believe in the Tao and the movement of these things, and that's what we do. We extemporize here on the Docking Earth. So,
Yeah, he wrote a lot about the bus, but I'm going to choose one that's our neighborhood, North Portland. And I also I edited his work, and I love what I wrote on this, and I'm going to read my editorial comment. You need to break this into more than one sentence. I think a sentence this long is a misdemeanor. And I wrote this some months ago. Now I think it's perfect. Something must have happened to me. It must be you, Polo. But I think it's a perfect long sentence. And this is called Interstate and Lombard. As the number 75 cruises through North Portland, rush hour crowds bump and grind, bleary-eyed environmentalists hold tight to black garbage bags as wide as the aisle, squeaking with aluminum cans and plastic bottles. Road warriors in grimy duct tape jackets awkwardly hit on startled damsels who have sewn goofy cartoons on their fuchsia backpacks. Ebony maidens pop bubblegum, yell out the window at shy Maasai hotties of their East Side tribe, and boisterous gangstas in sports jerseys, baggy trousers, drooped between knees, hop on board to jive and woof to their rolling turf at the back of the bus.
Yeah. You know what's amazing about that is how much social observation he has of the entire range of the human animal running around in modern life. Yeah.
Yes. You speak oftentimes, and you've have today, you've used the word confluence, and in fact, that's one of the titles of one of his books. And I think that's why we held David so dear. There are any number of us who think of ourselves as kind of caught on both sides of the big, deep blue of the Pacific. And this area in which we live now is a confluence for us, a confluence of two majestic river systems, you know, one that drains a quarter of our continent and the other one that brings all that fertile Willamette Valley soil up to Portland, and they mix, and they come to the ocean, and they mix with clouds, and they make rain. And David was that kind of man, you know, who represents to us this region and a kind of natural entree for us. I'd like to read for you comments by Nim Shuto, also from Josephine's article. And Nim is a Thai Buddha-inspired painter. And her work is really adored by white folks. The immediacy of her art has that kind of confluence. That kind of, to call it crossover would be silly. It is a confluence of spirit. And she said this about David, and the reason I'm reading it now is because it feels so much like what Josephine has just read from his collection. And Nim said, while many people spend their everyday life rushing to live large lives, David Johnson walked tiny, slow steps to enjoy, investigate, and feel the beauty of the earth. It flows in his poetry, it flows in his writing, it flows in our hearts. Wish I'd said that.
Well, you know, looking at this older work, he really he was a nature boy. He's a classic, you know. There are poems about blue herons, Elegy to a Blue Heron. I'm not going to read that one, but here's a little one. Three poems burnished by your waterfall. Heron overhead, you on your side, I on mine, blue heron above us, three hearts beating. A white dance of emptiness. Very haiku-like, very, very, very immaculate sort of Asian or Japanese haiku kind of picture. But he loves the outdoors. But let's hear your voices. And I'm going to give Polo a poem to read because I want to hear his voice. And Polo is a poet. We need to know that. But Josephine, keep going. What else do you want to read? Help.
Of David's here.
Yeah, wait until or do you want to read a couple of yours, too? I mean, you're a poet.
Eventually, yeah.
Okay,
I'm a poet,
well,
very influenced by David Johnson. But let's stay with David for a while.
Okay.
People may or may not know that David lived in Russia for almost 2 years.
Gosh,
with me, Asian Russia, mind you. Most people don't realize that most of Russia is in Asia. And we lived east of Siberia, which most people don't realize exists.
Well, name a city. Name a city. Help.
Blagoyeshensk.
Okay.
Now, that's where we lived. But you've probably heard of Khabarovsk, which is Portland's sister city.
Yeah, the sister city.
That's right. And Vladivostok, which is, you know, like one of two cities most people know in Russia. It's the Pacific one. But Blagoyeshensk was about a day by train from Khabarovsk and just east of Siberia. This is actually about St. Petersburg, but it talks about I don't know, his feelings about Russia. And it's also, it's a little self-indulgent because I've just started reading the new biography of Anna Akhmatova, and I'm just sort of all wrapped up in Anna. It's called Anna's Apartment. On the Fontanka Canal in St. Petersburg, I look for the flat where Anna Akhmatova, Russia's voice of exquisite sorrow, sought remnant peace from spiteful censure, jealous husbands, and the siege of Leningrad. I trace and retrace the length of this elegant watercourse, wondering below which yellow balustrade did she write poems to her brooding lover, the Neva River? Behind what gauzy window did she burn her papers in a stove choked with ashes? As the canal curves toward the Gulf of Finland, I find an under-restoration notice stapled on a likely facade in need of plaster and paint. Is the Federation keeping her away from me? Should I return when Russia is repaired? An artful shade glides by my upward gaze on her way to a Nevsky Prospect market, a Lent food card tucked in a gray sweater pocket.
Beautiful poem. John Reed, who is historically Portland's international author, and he would write 10 Days That Shook the World about the Bolshevik Revolution. But
we have a copy of it in Russian.
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, given to us by somebody in Vladivostok. Well, what a treasure, huh?
Well, my media friend and wonderful writer, Norman Solomon, we laid roses at the wall, the Kremlin wall, where Reed is buried in I guess it's Moscow, I guess. Okay, and in 1987. But Reed always wanted to go to China, and he never got there. The Russian thing happened, so he went there. But it seems to me that David Johnson was touching many different bases in the world. I mean, this person that I thought was maybe just an Oregonian reading, you know, something happened here. We still haven't answered the question, when did he come to the Asian Reporter? But
we figure it's about 10 years ago, because that's what Jamie says. Yeah. David also wanted to go to China.
Well,
that was his plan in the fall. He wanted to teach English there. So
a lot of people are doing that. Jerry Rust from Eugene, and David might have known about that.
I'm sure had
invited writers and poets and people to teach English in China. I'm thinking about it because I can't earn a living here myself. But Polo, we got to pick a poem for you. And Josephine, read one more. Yeah. You have a poem right in front of you. Okay.
Yeah.
Polo.
And this would bookend then what Josephine read. A David writing from the other side of the big deep blue. This is written on this side, on the Oregon side. It's about Bastendorf Beach. And I was attracted to this because Bastendorf Beach was my first job out of college.
I don't understand Bastendorf Beach.
Bastendorf Beach is a beach south of Coos Bay, Oregon.
Oh, it's sort of like a tourist place?
No, there's no tourists.
Oh, okay.
You know,
okay.
Coos County is sort of miserable. It's at the end of a long highway, and they have struggled, they've suffered so much as fishermen, as timbermen, being left behind by the economy of the rest of the country.
Well, they closed the salmon runs this year, south of Florence, I believe, and they logged the trees murderously where Horhauser and other timber companies ruined the sustainable forest and fishery practice. So here we go.
It's about that area, and of course, it has nothing. It's not been touched, his poetry, by the economic nightmare or the lack of political leadership that's led to the disaster in Coos County. But this is so pretty. It's called Loose Change. Combing Bastendorf Beach south of Stony Finger jetties that bracket the mouth of the Coos River, I find checkered periwinkles, speckled scallop fans, polished agates, notched limpet shells. Amidst kelp swirls, thickets of seaweed, I discover fleshless crab claws imploring a distant heaven. Mussel shell lips parted with half-spoken thoughts and low-tide shards that were once perfectly circular dollars. All this bounty, sentient or ornamental, mollusk or milky quartz, is loose change. I take home in deep parka pockets to store in a mason jar lined on a window shelf or place in your open hand.
Polo, you're a poet, and I know that because you were at the William Stafford one of the William Stafford things. I think it was the Broadway Books, one of the annual birthday party readings that is done for William Stafford in January. And you read this Columbia River poem, I believe. Columbia River, wasn't that it? And I'm going to invite you to read some of your poetry, but you're getting into the nature thing in Oregon, aren't you, in the Northwest? I mean, you're really feeling the landscape, aren't you, now? I mean, maybe.
Yes.
Okay. I knew you'd catch me off guard. Read another one. Just go ahead. What am I trying to say? The earth needs to be saved. There's some pristinity left. Maybe David Johnson growing up in Eugene, being around, you know, the landscape, helped shape him to become a globalist, helped shape him to think about the earth and its peoples in special ways. I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say. But there's a lot of nature in his poems. And okay, go read another one, please, and then we'll return to Joseph.
Yeah, and maybe we can get back to that point later, because you're making an important one, and I just didn't know quite how to answer your query in a pithy sort of way. But you're right. I think you've got something there that's very important to us, and that is the sense of this land and the spirit of this land that will survive any of the nonsense we do to her. But let me read. This is called At the Viewing Ceremony by David Johnson. In Portland's Japanese garden, we sit on wooden folding chairs, sip green tea and miso soup, awaiting the arrival of the harvest moon. And then it eases plump with bounty over the Cascade Rim to lean on Mount Hood to polite applause.
Gary Snyder, I think we on the West Coast for thousands of years have had some kind of Asian influence, but the poetry, you know, the haiku and then the Chinese poets, and unfortunately the anglicization of Mandarin has changed, so it's not Li Po, it's Li Pai, I believe, and stuff like this. It's very hard to put the some of the ethnic languages into English, but I think that we on the West, we can almost divide the literature of America and the way America thinks, and we have a great opportunity, I believe, by these, well, sampans and boats have blown over on our shore. It happened in Dr. John McLaughlin's time, and Eva Emery Dye wrote about Ranald MacDonald, who would have himself dumped off on in a whaleboat off the Japanese coast and even be arrested and so he wanted to learn Japanese. He wanted to know what that culture when in the 1840s or 50s, Japan was a closed society. But I'm saying there's some, and when I look at the old Chinese and Japanese poems, I see the landscape described, and the paintings and the art show the mountains and rivers without ends and the clouds and the incredible rocks. And I'm worried about Asia. I'm worried about Asia with this new surge of economy and capitalism losing some of those roots. And we're not going to wade into that right now. But it seems like maybe David Johnson had a feeling for this, you know, because he'd grown up in a place with clouds and herons and rivers and confluences. Josephine, do you want to go somewhere? You come. I want to hear your voice. Yin Yang. We want one woman's voice here.
I want to read about where David grew up.
Okay.
That's perfect.
Perfect.
Yes. And this is called Loss of a Watershed. At the hilly bottom of the Willamette Valley, 5 miles upstream from the fork where Fall Creek thickens the flow of the Willamette River, my family would stop at the Fall Creek store for camping supplies. In this outback emporium, grimy with road dust and wood smoke, black and white snapshots of fallen elk, deer and black bear, and color photos of fisherfolk holding strings of rainbows, were thumbtacked or scotch-taped on a wall near the cash register. On the wall behind the checkout counter, with its plastic barrels of Slim Jims and gallon jugs of hard-boiled eggs, the massive head of a 6-point black-tail buck flared its nostrils like the twin barrels of a 12-gauge shotgun. But the most striking trophy in that store was a stuffed cougar, poised mid-stride amidst flashy spinners, Hershey bars, jars of pink salmon eggs, and bottles of knee-high root beer. I knew the mountain lion's yellow eyes were colored glass, yet I could swear the spooky panther was tracking us with his glare as we shopped for groceries. In 1962, the Army Corps of Engineers logged the basin of the Fall Creek drainage, moved salvageable houses, barns, and outbuildings to other locations, and built an earthen dam between two low-slung ridges to create a flood control reservoir. I read in the paper that the store had been deemed too old to move and was abandoned to the rising waters. Every time I drive along the shoreline of that placid lake, every time I cruise by the site of the old store, saddened by the loss of my childhood's watershed, I see two defiant eyes beaming like headlamps through 12 fathoms of lucid blue-green water.
Isn't that a fabulous Oregon poem? And,
yeah.
And how Oregon is at risk, and you know how this kind of consumer capitalism is just gobbling up, you know, and destroying the landscape. Great poem.
And that's from an
give us the
a manuscript. This is from Drifting Through the Oregon Territory, which is a manuscript that is pretty much done, and it's got photographs in addition to both poetry and prose by David. And we're hoping to publish this. Not sure how, but hoping to get it out there.
It's really a fabulous Oregon collection, it sounds like. And what's the title of the other book that you have? I have this Confluence thing, but you have in front of me.
Oh, David's most recently published book is called Pitching My Tent on Slanted Ground. And, you know, one of the things that happens when you die is nobody knows your password. Tell someone your passwords before you die.
Oh, so it's locked in the computer.
Kind of like that. Okay. This was published by Walking Bird Press, which is Peter Jensen's press, but it's available through Lulu.com, which is a print-on-demand service. Oh. So if people go to Lulu.com and they put David's name into the search function, they'll find this book and they'll be able to get it. The problem is, if I do that, then I have to pay the same amount they do, and then I have to take it over to the bookstore, and then you understand the deal here. But we're all trying to figure out David's password so we can get these books out in bookstores, because he would have wanted that.
Oh, gosh. This is going to take some Asian juju, isn't it? I mean, we're going to have to figure this one out. I mean,
some deeds and demons. Yeah, you can do it.
Polo, help us with this. We'll have to throw not the dice, but the bones, the tortoise, the cracked tiger.
Grandpa surely, Chuck, can handle this.
Shamanism, you know, that's an Asian thing, and it's a Native American thing. And okay, I'm going to stop. Let's keep going here. Polo, I love your voice. And Josephine, I want you to read a couple of your poems. Do you want to read poems about David? Or we're doing fine. We're at we have about, you know, 15, 17 minutes left. But let's start to figure where we want to go, what's being left out.
Well, as far as my own stuff went, I decided to bring poems that David liked, poems of mine.
I hope to God everyone is listening. We are trying to honor Josephine Bridges and Polo Ronald Lata Sangjang Catalani, Polo from the Asian Reporter. We're honoring David Johnson, and I just want to kick myself. It's hard to kick yourself in your own behind, but I'd try. I just wish I had known this person better, but we're doing it right now on the Talking Earth. We're honoring David Johnson, late of the Asian Reporter, and late. But, you know, he's not late. Actually, here's a poem. I get only grins from the flaming horse that haunts my new sphere. It was himself who seduced Lois Lane off the roof of the Daily Planet building. It was himself who shoved Hart Crane off the fantail of the steamship Orizaba. It was himself who hounded Poe through the delirious streets of Baltimore. I hear the warnings. I catch his drift. One by one, the lights in Tacoma's Union Station have burned out. One by one, the axe wounds in my oak tree heal. He did have a cosmic sense. I think this person knew that none of us lives forever. And that,
yeah,
none of us lives forever. One more, and then Josephine, I want you to read, or Polo, I want you to take over my voice. When it comes like lightning on the banks of the little Blitzen. I finally let go of us, a ripple of light on the current way it is on the current way it is. We have to follow the way.
Yeah.
We're trapped in a larger pattern, I mean, you know, in nature. And I don't know when Western culture is going to wake up and get off this apocalyptic notion that some flaming God is going to come down to heaven and resurrect our bones. I think we have to realize that we are in the flow of the cosmos, in confluence again, Polo, the river of all these energy, this incredible globalism that's happening, and there are so many currents and threads of international culture. And I'm so angry. When I did my little book, The Land of Chi, I'm not saying it was a work of genius, I'm just saying when I did it, I was really focusing. My young friend is over in Kunming, and he's gone 4 times to China, and he loves it. He's juggling in the bars, and they pay him for 10 minutes, $150. He can't busk here on the street of Portland and get $5. But anyway, I think there is something happening on the planet that's different from what happened before. And I do hope, the wisdom of the East will challenge the apocalyptic folly of the West. That's what I hope.
I think you should call your next collection Apocalyptic Folly.
Okay, well, anyway.
Yeah, and I think David would probably smirk at us if we were taking him this far, but he's not here to smirk, so let's take him this
far.
Well,
you can do anything you want after the guy's done. Yeah. What, is he going to punch you in the nose?
No. And to bring back Nim Shuto's idea of him, he walked in tiny steps very carefully, but he had such a big heart and a broad vision. And I suppose that's sort of where you're going
with the broad vision.
Yeah, and you know, I have to. Earlier, you were talking about the West Coast and how occasionally a Japanese fisherman washed up on shore, and I think that's not true. I think there's been lots of traffic on that grand freeway. That's the Pacific Ocean.
Back and forth, you mean? Back and forth, yeah.
It's a circular motion of water, and we have always been in America. It's not that Indians walked over here, you know, and became
Americans.
No,
I know that.
They've always been here, and we've been always coming. It's just that history books have always looked for intercourse between Europe and America. And the truth is, if you look into the genes, I'm certain, if you look underneath the archaeological sites of villages, you're going to find Chinese shard, you're going to find Japanese pottery, you're going to find Hawaiian, you know, Kanaka or Polynesian people's bones. This is...
Thank you for bringing that out, because I didn't want to get caught in all those old colonial, wrong-headed concepts.
This part of the country has always been packed with people. Solid. It's not that settlers came and needed to suppress the wildlife. There have been very articulated and elegant cultures on the west coast of America, just like the east coast of Asia, and we have always been one community of confluence, of trade of people, blood, ideas, and money.
What the Asian Reporter is also trying to do, isn't it?
I mean, we do it. We don't try.
Well, okay. We do that.
We assume that. And that the mainstream assumes that settlers came from the east of America to the west and made America American.
Invaders.
Is a very limited view. And I suppose that's why David is so delightful to us, because he's a Westerner. And it's not that he speaks Asian sensibilities. He doesn't. If you, the piece I read of his a little while ago about the viewing ceremony in the Japanese gardens is a very Western look, you know, but from listening to him, we get a feel of how we need to speak, how we need to feel and talk in order to be heard.
Particularly using the English language.
Using the English language. And, you know, immigrants are very practical folk. I mean, we've got all that sort of, you know, old world mysticism nonsense. Of course we do. But more than anything else, we are interested in being successful on this shore of that grand freeway. And so we listen very carefully and pick up on people like David, how he speaks, how he's understood and accepted and adopted as our own.
Yeah, I had a little program. KBOO did, Andrew Geller, who does a wonderful People Rise Up program this morning at 10 p.m. every Wednesday. But he interviewed Gavin Menzies, who got into a little trouble. A wonderful book, 1421, the year that the Chinese discovered America, and it's a wonderful thesis, and I think the thesis got hung up on trying to make certain points, because I had a book with me, and I don't think I can dig it up right at my fingertips. Maybe I'll bring it back. But apparently, when Jesse Applegate, the native people here, were talking about Buddhist monks having been here, and I'll bring this reference back, but this trans-Pacific back and forthness has been happening for tens of thousands of years or whatever.
Yes. And the Emperor Qing's fleet came with 400-foot treasure ships. A fleet of 400 ships.
Oh, yeah.
A 400-foot treasure ship.
That is a fascinating story.
Has a rudder that is as long as the Nina Pinta or Santa Maria was long. These are folks who sailed to sea with gardens so that their sailors wouldn't get scurvy, with courtesans, with orchestras.
Oh, it's a fabulous
engineers.
Story. Yeah,
you know, this is not... this is a very civilized, old-world folk coming over here long before those folks who finally used their map.
And used their map.
Used their maps in the 16th century.
You're recapitulating the story, and it's an amazing story, and it's something that we need to learn. I'm going to bring you back, Polo, in the end of May, on the fourth Monday of May. Where should we go now? We're going to have to figure out what are we going to do, Josephine. And I'd like to hear a woman's voice. Polo can read it. You know, I have a tendency to talk too much. I think we should read some poems. And do you want to read a couple of your poems?
Because, yes.
So David influenced. Were you a poet? Well, this is terrible. This sounds so competitive, but I'm a European, probably underneath it all. Were you writing poetry when you met him? Were you both writing, and you met as poets or as literary persons?
Yeah, we did meet as poets, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
I think we've both pretty much been writing all our lives.
And you probably, reading each other's work, probably in some ways played counterpoint or whatever, maybe not.
I actually rewrote some of his poems, and he did the same with some of mine, and we stole them from each other because we did better versions and agreed on that. This is one that he liked, and I love the reason why he liked it. And I have to read the poem before I tell you what he said about it, but... I'll just read it.
It's Josephine called, Bridges.
It's called For a Limited Time Only. The morning after she told him she didn't love him anymore, he dug out a coupon book she'd made for him back when she might have loved him still. All the coupons were intact. In all those years, he hadn't redeemed one. He chose the one that read, "You get another chance," showed it to her over the awkward breakfast, but she shook her head and told him the coupon had expired. Now, David loves this poem.
Well, he likes the quirky humor of this poem.
Yeah. Well, the reason he said, and you are the guys who know this, the reason he said that this poem is a good poem is because guys never use coupons. Is that true?
No, I don't.
Do you use coupons, Polo?
I don't think I've ever
cut
a coupon in my life.
Yeah, see, I used a coupon yesterday. I use coupons all the time. Oh, so that is one of those, yeah, that's a woman thing.
Let's do a couple more woman things. I want to hear this woman thing. Yeah, I hate coupons. I throw the thing. I don't throw them. I try to give them to clerks, store clerks, and some people want them and some people don't. Because the darn Oregonian is about an inch and a half of chopped up forest trees and their coupons. They make $1 billion off of their... commercial side, but give us another, give us some more points of view, because you knew David so intimately, maybe better than Polo, I don't, better than anyone almost in this, certainly in this.
I like to think so. David helped me write this one very, very much. It's called Love Gone Sour, another woman's voice. The dumpster diver scores a dozen jumbo eggs in their polystyrene nests, 11 open-end Taiwanese metric wrenches, 10 back issues of Drum Circle, 9 Yoda Band-Aids, 8 baseball caps advertising local watering holes, 7 dingy tube socks in need of darning, a 6-pack of Zima empties, 5 Hungry Man Salisbury steak frozen dinners, 4 potato leek cardboard cup of soups, 3 close to used up rolled up trial size Tynactin ointment tubes, a pair of Tandy pressboard speakers, and 1 Eddie Bauer t-shirt, gleaming white, never been worn.
America's becoming a dumpster diving, second world nation. Anyway, Give more. I know, Josephine. No, I like your voice. I feel you're explosive. I feel that when I deal with you, I have to.
Okay, then here.
I see your haircut now. I never saw your haircut over the telephone. You have a magnificent haircut. You are.
Then this is me writing in David's voice.
You have nerve ends. Okay.
And this is the one with a bad word in it.
I don't care. We don't. We're at night now. We're pre-recording this.
It's called The Siege of Vancouver, Washington. And David was in the rehab center in Vancouver. He was a veteran. He was in the Navy. And he had a stroke, and he ended up there for a couple of months recuperating. And one of the days he was there was Veterans Day. And this is a poem of his that I rewrote and claimed, and he agreed mine was the better. It's called The Siege of Vancouver, Washington. All right, I'm predisposed to be pissed off these days, but I'm only the recipient of the latest onslaught, honest. Here's the lowdown. I'm stuck in Vancouver, Washington, in this VA unit where old soldiers, missing various pieces, learn how to make do with what's left. We're addressed as Mr. when we're asked if we've had a bowel movement. We're cajoled to use the magic word, which is probably please, and not why don't you eat shit and die, you vile harridan in white shoes. Oh, and one more thing, it's Veterans Day. Don't get me wrong, I like kids and it's not their fault. I can picture these boring, bored teachers who drone on about how veterans died for our freedom, kind of like Jesus died for our sins, only they can't say that. So the kids draw crayon stick figures holding flags in green fields without graves, and they copy the words from the blackboard. We thank our veterans. They help keep us free. Yeah, right. As if their liberty has been at stake in every dirty little skirmish from Korea to Kuwait to Kosovo. As if Vancouver, Washington was recently held under siege for three polar winters and we all ate rats to survive until the liberation. Kids, it's nice to send pictures to your elders, but don't you ever think that what we did was right or saved you from tyranny. Here is the secret I was supposed to keep. You will be free the day you tell the big shots who pull the strings, that you won't pull the triggers.
Fabulous poem. It's magnificent, yeah. You have a powerful voice. Very, very great poem, yeah. Wow. I've got to catch my breath on that one.
Geez,
yeah, David was
good,
real.
Josephine. No,
thank you. I love to read poetry. And David was vehemently anti-war. Mm. And, you know, that's one of the things that's only gotten worse since his passing. So
they want the oil. They don't want to give up the oil. So I don't know what they'll do anything. Just keep the oil. Paul Bremer and all the rest of them. They want the oil. Yeah. Oh God, what a stark world we live in. So free associate a little bit here. And Josephine, I'd like you to read another one. How long have you been writing poetry? And where did are you an Oregonian? I don't know your past very well.
I was born in Concord, New Hampshire, and that's all I did there. I moved to Oregon in 1979, and I met David the very month I moved to Banton.
On the coast.
On the coast, yeah, down below Coos Bay, down below Bastendorf Beach. What else did you ask me? Oh, and you know what? You know what William Stafford used to ask people when...
Oh, tell me.
They
yeah,
asked
I love
him,
Stafford.
Yeah, oh, yeah. When they asked him, how long have you been writing? He said, when did you stop writing? And that's pretty much the story for me.
Continuously
as soon
since
as they
high
let
school.
Me. Yeah, yeah. No, long before that.
Oh,
basically, as soon as I probably drew stuff on the walls that I thought was writing, but I remember being about 4 years old and sitting down in front of that slot in the door where the mail would fall through and running with the junk mail to say, can I have it? And filling out forms. I remember doing that. So,
Josephine, I really like you, and to see you in the flesh, and you have electric nerve ends everywhere, and it's very exciting, and I want you to do a couple more poems. You're not the Jenny in this Confluence book, though, are you?
I'm not.
Who the heck was Jenny? I don't know. Was he a womanizer?
He didn't talk. He was not a womanizer. David loved women, and he loved them one at a time.
No. Okay. Oh, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it
that's
that.
That's okay.
That you're correcting. Yeah. What does the term womanizer mean? And we need to use our language properly. Yeah. So he loved them one at a time, so he didn't love them multiply.
Well, he may have loved them multiply. There are some urban legends about that sort of thing, but... He loved me one at a time. And this is a poem about David.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
It fits the theme of here.
Yeah, and you know, it's an old poem. He knows it. It's called Random Tuesday Blues. I tell him I don't feel like getting out of bed, and he says there is not a thing I have to do. We don't need any groceries. No one's coming over. I can have the whole day off. I can hide all day long, even from him if I want to. He doesn't know all my hiding places. I can choose what to put in this shiny red folder he got for me. I can read my mystery before it's even light out. I can have my coffee here in bed. He'll bring it to me.
Josephine Bridges, we're honoring, the work of David Johnson. And I don't think, was he a Buddhist or was he, you know?
You know what he called himself? A backslid Taoist.
A Taoist, that's
better. Backslid, mind you.
Yeah, well, but nature, you know, we're all part of nature. I don't know, these abstract religions get on my nerves a little bit, but Taoism is, I always thought it was essentially what nature is or what's happening with rivers and trees and...
Probably meant he didn't think he took enough walks or something.
Oh, okay. Paula, where do you stand on all this? Or what? We've got about 4 minutes left. I'm going to get my other engineer to help me finalize this because we're pre-recording this. Where should we go in the last 4 minutes here? And I'm going to dart out of here. But do you want to read another poem, Paula?
Of David's?
Yeah,
of course.
And Josephine, you read a couple more, and I'll be right back. This sounds weird, but don't worry about that. Don't worry, I'll be right back.
Don't worry, no one is driving.
You can take it over, yeah.
Trust us. This is by David Johnson. It's called A Rendezvous of Natural Consequence. A bald eagle plummets through the snowfall above two lovers motoring Lake of the Woods Highway. Around the marshy shore of Fish Lake and down Butte Creek Valley to sprawly Medford. To those unfazed by the mystic, it's a chance encounter with a glint-eyed raptor. But we three know what it really was. A rendezvous of natural consequence with all that holds for us all together. Through one storm after another.
That was about me.
Oh, my God. You're not Jenny. Okay, what's the nickname? They don't call you Josie. They didn't.
Not since I was.
You'd kill somebody. I love you,
Josie. You're right.
I Josephine had me nervous here. This is a tough woman. You have to work with her on a daily basis.
She's dangerous. Yeah, yeah. I tried to keep a table between us.
Yeah, live wires.
Yeah. Yeah, she bites too.
Okay. Well, we're going to bring Polo back. We've been honoring David Johnson, and what? How should we conclude here in just a minute or two? What should we do?
I thought that poem was a kind of nice confluence again of Josephine. And David, and what you had suggested would be, his kind of Tao-like leanings as a writer and as a man.
We blend back into nature, possibly. I mean, is that, I don't know. There's even the cornball poem Thanatopsis talks about that. You know, William, no, I've not got the wrong name there. I can't think of the poet's name anyway, Thanatopsis. But I love that notion that Taoism, the exhaust goes out the tailpipe of the car, and you breathe it in the window if you're not careful. I mean, or your neighbor does who's driving behind you. So I don't think we ever, at the molecular level or at the spiritual level, get out of the stream of things. You know, and I like that notion that. The stream, the way of things is like a stream flowing across the landscape.
Yeah. And you can get out of the way of things, but it's exhausting, and ultimately you're going to hurt yourself, maybe others. And that's why David's piece, the last one I read, was so beautiful. It was that moment of understanding that there is no coincidence. It's all just part of a tapestry of an eagle overhead, him and her in a car, winding down the highway towards the city.
Join us this Friday at 6 p.m. for Bread and Roses, the power of the princess.
Join us as we discuss the princess icon and its power to captivate the imaginations of girls across generations, shaping perceptions of self, womanhood, and destiny. Now a billion-dollar business, what messages are passed down?
We'll also take a humorous and analytical look at this country's own princess icon, Miss America.
That's this Friday at 6 p.m. on KBOO.
I want to be princess.
Hey, that's my crown.
No, it's mine.